Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Live from a steam room in Megropolis 6 on the planet Pluto, we present a wheezing, groaning sound. It's the only podcast about Doctor Who in existence, and possibly the only podcast to be recorded by three men naked in a sauna with a robotic dog, a chemical toilet, and a partially shaved mandrill. I'm Paul Litchfield, and joining me as ever on this epic quest is Mr. John Rayner, Mr. Tom Neenan. Good day, gentlemen.
Hello.
So, polish your whip. Slap a mattress to the front of a golf cart, all be revealed, and give a to the Inland Revenue as we tax our way through the bureaucratic red tape that is the Sunmakers.
Ooh.
Oh yes. And before I begin, ladies and gentlemen, if you like this sort of thing, you might want to come and see Easing Groaning Sound live at the King's Place, which is in King's Cross in London on September the 2nd. Doris, where's me pills? And on September the 2nd of 2000 of this year at 9:30 of the PM, where we will be discussing a three-parter called Silver Nemesis. Who's it? Bert, go away.
Thank you, Bert.
I thought Bert did very well there.
Bert did brilliantly. That was his first broadcasting, wasn't it?
So. Yeah, not bad at all. No. Not bad at all. No. First take as well, first take.
Yeah. You call him first take Bert, so.
Yeah, I always call him first take Bert. I could take a run up. Yeah, I know you did, Bert.
Yeah.
Fuck off. Anyway, we're here to talk about The Sunmakers, gentlemen.
Ooh.
Oh, yes, The Sunmakers, which was aired on the 26th of November, 1977.
Oh, I was, how old was I? 3 months old.
I was four.
Mm.
Yes.
Was this your birth story then, John?
Sorry?
Oh, this wouldn't have been your birth story, would it?
No, it would have been the one before this, whatever that was. Hang on, I'll look it up. I know this isn't interesting to what's on telly, Paul, but people like to know these
things. No, I'm really
image
interested.
Image of the Fendal.
Oh, that's really good.
Ooh. What was it again,
is
Tom?
That image of the Fendal, which is good.
Image of the Fendal.
Invisible enemy. Mm.
Oh, hang on, would it have been, though? Would it have been, though?
3 months. Oh, it might have been Horror of Fang Rock. It's one of them.
Oh.
Those are all good, though. They're all good.
I'm interested. I feel like I'm
honest,
who you think you are.
To be honest, if it was John's mum and she was pregnant, it might have been the Invisible Enemy. Hey!
The Invisible Enemy went out in October, so no, we've got to go far back. Oh, God, this isn't what we do on air.
Sorry, I've got...
Hang on. It was Horror of Fang Rock. I was born...
Oh,
no, I wasn't.
Lovely.
Horror of Fang Rock.
For fuck's sake!
Horror of Fang Rock, it must have been a new series that came out in September.
Yeah, down at Fang Rock.
Ah, there you go.
Down on Fang Rock.
Doctor Who.
Yeah, so but I was born between the 14th and 15th. Sorry, everybody, I've derailed everything. Sorry.
No, I'm really
glad we've
done that.
I like to have it in my head.
Mm.
Yeah.
But on that night, on the night of The Sunmakers episode one, what else was on television, Paul?
Mm. Well, let me tell you. And by the way, chaps, don't mind the show. BBC One, you started, of course, 9:30 a.m. with Multicoloured Swap Shop.
Hooray!
With special guests Hot Chocolate and Roger Hargreaves.
Oh.
that's a heady
Roger
mix.
Hargreaves?
I like that.
That's really both ends of the spectrum, isn't it? Yes, Roger Hargreaves.
He of Mr. Men.
He of Mr. Men, 1977.
Mr. Sexy.
Oh, Mr. Sexy, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably... I've got a new character called Mr. Sexy Thing. Oh, Errol, come...
Mr. Sexy Thing was going into town.
Yeah. I can't do
To have to... Oh, yeah, to do an Arthur. No, I can't either.
No, he'd be like, Mr. Sexy was down at the...
Yeah, there you go.
Just happy. and they were wearing their usual custard cream shoes.
One day, Mr. Sexy put on his thong and went down to the town hall. Bum, bum, ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. He was immediately arrested for indecent exposure. Bum, bum, bum,
bum. And he had to share a cell with Mr. Tickle.
Why? Don't worry, because next door is Mr. Hardon.
By the way, if you read Mr. Tickle and keep in mind that instead of tickling, he's a spree killer, it makes a lot of sense.
Okay. There's an origin story somewhere.
I think there is.
We don't know what it is. No. Anyway, so that was Monte Carlo Bloody Swap Shop. Then, of course, it was Grandstand. 12:15 to 10 past bloody five.
What the bloody hell?
Yeah, closely followed by It's the Basil Brush Show with special guests Demis Roussos, Henry Cooper, and ABBA.
Bloody hell.
Fuck me. Do you reckon they did a funny skit where Henry Cooper has to... I don't want to say beat off ABBA, but you know what I mean.
I think he has to fight Demis Roussos.
Yeah.
But you're punching him in the stomach and Roussos could be going, I can't feel a thing.
Yeah, he'll be in the middle of the ring going, forever and ever, and then there'll be a boxing glove go, biff.
Mm.
Yeah. There you go. Covered that. And then straight after Basil Brush was Doctor Who.
Hey.
Yes, The Sun Makers Part 1, and it has a blurb. And it says, the TARDIS arrives on Pluto, which has been made habitable and turned into a giant factory.
Mm.
There you go.
Yeah, that's all. Accurate.
Yeah, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that. Yeah. And then just after that was some newsy bit of... Pfft, and then it was the two Ronnies.
Hey.
Yay! And this is great bit of blurb. Piggy and Charlie. So that's fantastic.
Diddling.
Yeah. How exciting. Mm. Piggy and Charlie find the dead yokels in Drake's Bottom.
Oh, that's Stop It, You're Killing Me.
Yeah.
With Kate O'Mara.
Yes, and the Welsh miners. The Welsh miners join the Ronnies for the musical finale. I remember that one as well.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yep. Oh, nice.
Yeah. Mm. Lovely
stuff.
Were they mining
things? Were they like, down in my crack, I've got a big axe?
Yeah, but they're all doing Welsh. It's like, Taffy and Flo were down at the seam, and you should have seen what they saw. Ooh, you know.
Oh.
Yeah. it was all like that, if I seem to remember.
Mm.
And then at 9:05, after two Ronnies, was Starsky and Hutch.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's the Sweeney. What's the... I can't remember the theme tune to Starsky and Hutch.
There you go. What was that squeaking? Did someone stand on a mouse?
I think so. I forgot to tell you, joining us this week is Sweep.
It's my dog Casper doing his best Sweep impression.
That's lovely. Amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
Starsky and Hutch, and it says Starsky and Hutch are in for a few surprises when a reporter is assigned to them.
Oh, they won't like that. They won't like a reporter. Like
it's Carol Caldwaller.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
On BBC Two, this is 1977, programmes began at 2:30 in the afternoon.
Jeez.
What are you doing to yourself? Oh, that's the dog.
It's Casper, he's making me sound awful.
Yeah, he's doing terrible things.
Yeah, he really is.
So yeah, programmes began at 2:30, and then it began with Saturday Cinema, with a film called Two Weeks with Love. Teenager Patty Robinson is growing up fast and finds that the chief obstacle to finding romance is her lack of a good corset.
Oh, God.
What?
Doris!
Doris, I'm going to tell you this now. Get out the house. Lock the door. Come around your sisters and don't come back to next St. Swithin's Day. I'm watching a bloody movie.
He's a cineast, is that? He
really is. He should have had the film programme. He lost out to Barry Norman.
Oh,
and why
God.
Not, Doris?
God, blimey, nearly made it to the end credits. At 4:30, just after this film, was a Horizon special.
Mm.
And it says this. Was civilization created by intelligent beings who landed on Earth in prehistoric times? Mm. Eric von Daniken thinks so, and he's Swiss.
That's Charity of the Charity?
Charity of the Gods.
Charity of the Gods, not Charity of the Gods with old Terry Wogan.
No. Welcome to the old sweet Charity of the Gods.
At 9:00
we've got Venusian.
9:00 we've got Banana.
Few of these Venusian lads. Coming up later. Victoria Wood. Anyway, so you had that Horizon, and that was closely followed by The Gun. A series of 10 programs about guns. Episode 8, Guns.
I think they've kind of peaked episode 8, haven't they? Where can they go at 9?
I have.
Not guns?
I presume episode 1's just pebbles. So 2's daggers. Then, they're working their way up to it. It's good that. It's good that. Yeah. Now, just after The Gun, 7:55 was The Lively Arts. In performance, highlights from the annual St. Cecilia's Day concert. I'm sorry, what? Do you remember every year when we watch the St. Cecilia's Day concert?
Oh, yeah.
What? I've never heard of that at all. Very old. There you go. And then just after that was Network. Network.
Film?
No. It just says this. Left-wing novelist Barry Hines didn't read his first book until he was 20. Then he wrote A Kestrel for a Knave, which became the film Cares.
So there you go.
He had a good variety of novels.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, it's a Hines joke, sorry.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
You mean he wrote 52 novels?
Yes. There's me not getting the Have I Got News For You Twitter account job.
Just talk yourself out of that one.
Oh no, I'm livid.
Just do standard Paul Merton. Is it an otter and a hot air balloon? Everyone goes, yeah, fuck it, it is. Yeah. Anyway, so that was your wonderful entertainment on BBC One and BBC Two.
Oh,
but anyway, we're not here to talk about all that drivel that was on the telly box. Mm. We're here to talk about The Sunmakers Part One, and we open with a very nervous looking citizen. Oh yes, and he's awaiting news. That he already knows. He already knows the news that his father is dead. This, for some reason, is delivered by a woman who seems to open a toilet in a wall and speak to
him. It's another laughing set, isn't it?
It really is. It's covered in tits.
Yeah.
Also, you know the man he goes to see? What's he called?
The collector or the collector.
He looks like Simon Murray.
He's the gatherer.
The gatherer, that's right.
The gatherer.
I just kept thinking that's Simon Munnery.
Yes. Mm. That big hat that he's got all the time.
I'm going to tell you now, I love the gatherer much in this.
He's great.
He is absolutely brilliant.
He reminds me of the Vic Reeves, Lloyd Grossman a bit.
Yes.
He's got big forehead.
I have never seen a character just embrace the smugness of this man so beautifully.
He looks like a raspberry bee.
Yes. He's so brilliant. Anyway, so we are told, this poor fellow is told that this fella will only be laid to rest if his death tax is paid. And apparently he hasn't got enough money to do such a thing, so he has to go to the gatherer's office. So the gatherer is just, how can we explain him? He's just so unrelentingly smug. And he's a real businessman, but he's got things. He obviously likes the highlights in life, doesn't he? He likes all the little things. He's got, look at my desk, it's made of real wood.
Yes.
And the person,
yeah.
I've never seen real wood before. I can't remember. Go on.
He says it's mahogany.
Mahogany.
Yeah, I enjoy
which
that.
Which is great, yeah, because not quite understanding the old earth concepts.
I'm going to borrow that, though.
Mahogany.
It's mahogany. And then there's this lovely little thing about, well, have you paid your telmars? And he's like, well, I've got as much as I've got, my lord. And he's like, well, it's not quite enough. Oh, dear, you can't afford to bury your own father. Oh, well, you'll have to work 400 more shifts and probably die yourself.
Sorry, I should say at this point, has Robert Holmes been fucked by the taxman? Is this what this is?
100%.
100%. Yeah,
it does say on Wikipedia that this whole thing was written as a fuck you to the Inland Revenue.
Right, yeah. There we go. Yeah.
So there you go. He is 32 Telmar short, this poor guy. So the gatherer, and what I like about the gatherer is immediately he takes immense pleasure in the fact that he cannot afford it, and he knows he's going to have to work himself to death. So you're immediately going, oh, he's a wrong'un, this fella. But he does it with that he does it with that sort of magnanimous, smarmy charm that's really odious. And that's why I think he's my favourite character in all of this. He's certainly a lot better than the main villain, which is...
Anyway, yeah, we'll get to him. Yeah.
We'll get to that.
I like that he said Telmar, because I used to like them. They used to do those albums that weren't available in the shops.
only available on Telmar.
Don't you get annoyed though whenever you get a phone call from telemarketers? Doesn't work. Anyway, carry on.
I enjoyed it, Tom. I'm drunk.
Thank you.
Why not? So apparently, this poor guy must forego sleep and increase his hours to work himself to death to pay off the debts. Anyway, so you've got a little bit of establishing whatever. Then we cut back to the TARDIS. Brilliant. Doctor Who's playing chess with K-9. Doctor Who's doing all that. I'm amazing. K-9 beats him at chess. Doctor doesn't really want to admit that.
No.
Leela's really bored, which is a perfect character trait for Leela. Why are you playing chess when I could just be stabbing and killing everything? Which is really funny. Really good fun. And they're too busy to notice that the central column in the TARDIS, the central column, has stopped moving.
Which he blames on the paint.
Yeah, he blames it on the paint job.
I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah. So the TARDIS now lands on Pluto. Jesus.
All right, sweep.
I know you've got a thing about Pluto, but come on.
Jesus. Oh, God.
I had to think what happened if I mentioned Uranus. Oh,
let me just deal with sweep.
This is like when Tom Crowley was on.
Yes. Come on now, sweep.
Come on. Bye-bye, everybody.
Aww. We know Leela didn't wear much sweep, but that was...
We should also point out that Tom is recording live from Edinburgh.
From the Berg.
Anyway, Sweep's gone now.
Good.
Well, speaking of Sweep, the equivalent K-9 is told to stay in the TARDIS by the Doctor.
Yeah, because he says we're going to go for a WALK.
Yes, I love that. I love it again. Then you, in the first 10 minutes. Oh, for the love of fuck. Tom, is that now you playing with the toy?
Shut the door.
He removed the dog, but he kept the toy. Well, it looks like fun.
Everyone's having a good time.
It's such a brilliant thing. You're already 10 minutes in and you're already going, oh, Tom Baker, I love you so much. The fact that you're going so WALK in front of a dog that's already beat him at chess.
Brilliant. wonderful
absolutely
writing.
Brilliant. So the TARDIS has landed on Pluto, and the Doctor admonishes Leela for joggling his telescope, which is very funny.
Love it,
which I really like. And they meet the citizen from earlier, the guy who couldn't pay his telmars, and he's about to jump 1,000 meters to his death off the roof
of some horrible building.
I really like the simplicity of all the sets and the outside locations in this.
Perfect.
It just looks, they filmed it on an industrial estate in Slough. It just looks perfect. It looks
so
miserable.
So Spartan, isn't it?
Depressing, Spartan, grey, boring. It's all vents and asphalt. It just looks so lovely. They just went, we don't need to dress any of this up. And when they go and do the interiors, they make them look great.
Yep.
Yeah.
The interiors in this look really good.
Well,
everything looks.
They do look a bit like Chock-a-Block.
Well, yeah.
But no, I really enjoyed them for that.
I really like all the set work on this. It looks really good.
And Tom's in the last days of his good costume.
I love
my coat. That
he looks so good in that coat, doesn't he? He looks so good.
Phenomenal.
I know, he looks so good. And so they meet the citizen, and the Doctor persuades him not to jump, and he offers him a jelly baby, which is perfect.
Yeah.
And saves him. He saves him.
I like to think this inspired Lethal Weapon.
Got you.
What? So, what's the character's name? Is it Gordo? Cordo, so he's in a bath going, oh no. Then he falls off the top of the thing,
yeah.
Anyway, so the Doctor says, oh dear, this is a horrible poor fellow that we've met. What a wretched existence. Let's go and investigate. Perfect Doctor Who canon. They climb down Lala Ward, and there is an unnecessary amount of upskirting with Leela.
There is, I'm afraid, yeah.
Oh my God, it's
something
like,
for the dads!
Doris!
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. She's got a little leather knickers on and underneath a leather skirt. It's like, oh, come on. But there you go.
She is so great, though, isn't she?
She's brilliant in all this. She's doing perfect. She's doing perfect character, which is, I want to lamp it, I want to stab it, and I'm not going to stand for it.
Yeah.
And every time she gets into any scrape, she's like, I'll just kick the shit out of anything in my way.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. I like that. And the only other time she feels weakness is because she's chemically induced, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, really strong
really
character.
Good idea. Brilliant character. I love all that. So the Doctor and Leela and now Cordo descended to the bowels of the city. Meanwhile, the gatherer Haid has now picked up on his monitors that the TARDIS has appeared. He thinks it's illegal freight. Mm. More than likely smugglers and something to do with money. So he's very, very interested because this is a man obsessed with tax and laws and work and money, etc., etc. So they now descend into the underbelly of the city, which is clearly the London Underground, which still looks really good.
It looks fantastic. Yes.
Yeah, they filmed the London Underground.
Tunnels. It's so good. Mm-hmm.
The tunnels look so good, so good. So much better than sometimes a wonky old set, because that just looks real. And that, I love all that. And they have a little wander around.
It doesn't feel like one building, doesn't it? It's like, even though I'm sure it's filmed in all these things, you're like, the top of the building and the bottom and all that. It all actually, you feel like you're in the same building all the time, which is quite hard to
There's
achieve.
There's a weird coherence to it, which is so rare, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
You're absolutely right, So the Doctor Corda reveals where they are, which is they're on Pluto. It's run by something called the Company, and there are six suns powering all these individual Megropolis cities on Pluto. And you're like, okay, that's fine. I'm happy with all of that. And the Doctor then meets the Others, which is the people that live who don't quite obey by the rules. They're a bunch of absolute cunts.
Yes.
At the moment, they are. They get a bit better, but my God, I mean, really, I would have just gone, fuck it, I'm off.
They're a bit kind of Fagin's lads, aren't they? They've got little pen knives and stuff. And one of them is played by that bloke who used to be in Heartbeat.
Yes, that's right.
Greengrass? Was he Greengrass?
No, not Green. One of the policemen.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah. So they meet all the sort of ne'er-do-wells who don't obey the rules and work for the company, man. But they very much live in the undercity in the sewers, and they don't have any money or food, and they're all a bit annoyed. So they naturally, like, every time Doctor Who turns up anywhere, he's immediately a threat, and he's someone evil until he persuades them that he's lovely.
So you
go through all of that rubbish, which is all fine. And then K-9, rather cheeky, he doesn't stay in the TARDIS, does he? He goes off on a little jaunt, which means the first thing he fucking gets to is the ladder. So that should have been the end of it.
First thing he gets to is the TARDIS doors that he demonstrates.
Yeah, exactly. He can't even get out of
that.
They
should have found him in pieces at the bottom of that ladder.
Exactly. And a disabled ramp leading up the TARDIS. So the Doctor is sort of doing his usual, hello everyone, how are you, and all that lovely, and then Mandrill, who's the chief of the underground lot, immediately whips him. Whips the Doctor.
That's
not
horrible.
Not acceptable.
But Cordo then goes, no, come on, he might be alright. And they're like, yeah, well, he better prove it. You need to go up into the upper city and steal us 1,000 Telmars. Here's a thing for you to do that. If you're not a cool kid, then we'll know about that.
Yeah. Could you steal them for us? Because they're not available in the shops.
Because they're not available in the shops. Contents may unsettle during transit. But I'm talking about Leela.
Listen carefully. There's 2 bumper episodes coming out, but that's just the hors d'oeuvre. There's 8 more, Roger. 8 of them. People might hear them, Roger. I'm going to lie low. I think you should too.
Brian and Roger are back. 2 brand new episodes and a whole new series, wherever you get your podcasts. And see Brian and Roger live at the London Podcast Festival and the Menier Chocolate Factory in a whole new stage show. Check websites for ticket details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Yeah. Anyway, they decide that they're going to keep Leela as collateral, and if the doctor doesn't do what they say, she'll die. Leela isn't remotely upset by the whole notion of it. No. As soon as the doctor goes, okay, I'll do that, whatever, Leela goes, I will kick the living shit out of all of you. Yeah. And they're all like, yeah? So she has a bit of a scuffle with them. She's like, yeah, come on. You and his fucking army. I love it. Leela's not having any of it.
She's not flipping them over and stuff.
Yeah, it's so cool. Yeah. She does a really good fight sequence, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the Gatherer, Gatherer Hayde, that's his name, Gatherer Hayde.
Yep.
Not only has he noticed a TARDIS, illegal freight, he's now noticed K-9 wandering around the joint. There's probably an illegal quadruped that I can tax. He's like the man who loves the smell of his own farts, isn't he?
I would like to say, by this point, we're probably about, 17 minutes into the episode.
Yeah.
The word tax has been said about 400 times.
Yeah. It's not subtle, is it?
Times. No.
But you know what? This does it far better than fucking Syl ever does.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. True.
You know, the idea of profit above anything else, and does it with so much more aplomb.
This is Robert Holmes. This is like the Lennon McCartney of Doctor Who, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's going to be good, however obvious it is.
Mm. Yeah. Now, for some reason, Hayde thinks that the Doctor might be an Ajak, and I'm not quite sure what that
means.
Is.
He's good at cleaning toilets.
It's either that or he's toilet duck. We don't know.
Sorry, I ruined your joke.
No, it's absolutely fine. And he thinks he might be an arms smuggler or something illegal anyway. So the Doctor now gets his consom card, that's what it's called, a consom card.
Yes.
To receive the 1,000 Talmars, and he's sort of like in an ATM. And he uses it and he gets gassed and the Doctor collapses.
Horrible,
end of part one. And you're like, ooh.
Also, it's the most British thing in the world, because when he is getting gassed, he apologises.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, the card he's got, it looks like a tin of sardines.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely
Love
brilliant.
It.
Hmm. It looks like when you go to a really cheap restaurant and you go, do you have like a medical box? And they go, yeah. And then they bring it to the table and it's just got three corn plasters in it. And
or when you go to a really old hotel and you ask for your key and they give you the key and also this massive block with the room number on it.
Yeah. And here's the breeze block that comes with it so you don't steal our room. It's like, I'm just steal this shit out. Anyway. very good cliffhanger for episode one. Doctor being gassed. Good. Fine, you're fine with that.
He goes all Rose from Titanic, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He does his hand up.
Yeah. And he gets painted like a French girl. anyway, beginning of episode two, Corder, who sort of shadowed the Doctor, he flees the scene. He's too scared.
Mm. Yeah.
And the Doctor is not dead. He's just sort of unconscious. And he's taken away. And he's taken away to be corrected, to have his mind bothered.
This is my favourite scene of the four stories.
Which is brilliant, because he gets to meet a guy called Bisham, who's very much like, hello!
Yeah.
Yes, this is the sort of thing they do here. It's
He's like the man in the Planet of the Spiders that he meets, the John Preston.
Which again,
the genre of Doctor Who supporting actor, which is person who's sort of imprisoned next to the Doctor.
Yeah.
But is somehow perfectly fine with it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really chirpy.
It's absolutely ghastly what they do. Oh, yes, absolutely.
He said he was punished for having creative thoughts. No, curiosity. Yes. Curiosity, sorry.
Curiosity. Yeah, yeah.
So he's in the correction chamber and he's going to go through induction therapy and you're like, oh, no. What's really funny about it is the Doctor's in a straitjacket, which is hilarious, and he's down on this sort of gurney and there's a guy like, hey, I'm going to correct you. And then the machine goes, and it's not because the Doctor's done anything, it's just because it happens to be malfunctioning.
The Doctor does do something. He gets off the gurney.
Does he really do something?
Yeah, he gets off the gurney and says, I'm just going for a hop, it's good for the circulation.
Oh, that's right.
And then when he's hearing about the drugs they're given, he uses his mouth to pull out the capsule and swallow.
Oh, did he? Okay, I did not notice that.
It's while the guy's telling him about the drugs they have to take. Right, like, okay. He goes, are you a chemist? He goes, no, but I recognise anxiety-inducing...
So while Bishop's doing his monologue, the Doctor's doing a bit of subterfuge. Perfect. Yeah. And that makes even more sense.
So I read somewhere in this one that... Because you're right, Tommy's doing loads of great stuff.
Mm.
And I remember reading somewhere that basically Robert Holmes knew that he hated... That him and Louise Jameson didn't get on. I won't say he hated her.
Yeah.
But they didn't get on. So this is a story where they're deliberately kept separate.
Split off all the time.
Mm.
Exactly. So I think he's really good and he's really infused because he sort of thinks for his bits it's like, well, it's just me on my own, and that's when he's sort of at his best.
And this is where we lead towards the denouement where we know that he's wrong with the deadly assassin, where he's got a story on his own and it's horrible because he hasn't got to play against.
Yeah, he's got no one he's allowed to do what he wants to do.
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
You can do that for scenes, but you can't do that for four episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But up until this point, Tom Baker's been doing lovely stuff. When he first meets all the others, they're like, we think, he's like, oh, I shouldn't think too much, too taxing for you, and all that sort of stuff, which is really gentle and fun and sort of parochial and proper Tom Baker.
He has some
Baker.
Wonderful lines in this.
He's got beautiful lines in this, and he's never frightened at any point, which is what I really like about him.
He has one a bit later on where he says, I'm known for saying very clever things. Or
yes.
Love it.
He's just brilliant. Effortlessly odd and what my Time Lord Doctor Who should be. He's just lovely in it. He just takes the piss out of everyone. He goes, yes, I'll do that. And, oh, that didn't work. And ha, ha, ha. But all the while, he knows what's going on and he's totally in control. There's a bit where he sort of genuinely worries about Leela, which, again, is a nice thing. He worries about his assistant, even though in real life he obviously hated her. But there you go. Oh, yeah, sorry. I've just looked at my next note. The Doctor goes for a little hop to increase his circulation. Yeah, so he does all that.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
We now cut to the Collector. Not the Gatherer, the Collector.
No.
Ooh. Now, what is he? He's a little sort of...
I've got a theory about him.
Go on.
Yeah.
Do you know sometimes people have head injuries and then when they wake up, they've got a weird voice?
Yeah.
I think this is Alf Garnett after he's been in a car crash.
He woke up, he can suddenly speak fluent Portuguese.
Well, he makes some intimations in his speech where he sounds a bit Jamaican, where he says, situation... He says, situation, regulation.
I think he's trying to sound a bit like a computer or something. And that's it, because everything is 0009834, double for the fiscal tax and the revenue. You know, he's basically a thing. And you actually think maybe he's a little sort of dwarf robot thing. Mm. The only thing that makes him look really weird, obviously he's a tiny man, but he's got weird sort of like backcone eyebrows.
Can we call, can we call him Tax Ross? Instead of
you
Dav
could
Ross.
Call him.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Mm.
Weirdly, the name I want to call him was in our last episode. I want to call him Tom Tit.
Oh, yeah.
But I like, is it Henry Wolfe as the actor?
Henry Wolfe.
Is it Henry Wolfe? Harry Wolfe?
Yes, yeah.
He's really good. He's really good. Yeah, he's really good. He's got this weird sort of peripheral vision thing. He can't look at anything else apart from his little computer desk.
Yeah.
He is totally obsessed with...
Well, he's clearly supposed
to
be an accountant, isn't he?
Yes, yeah. Well, he's basically the Inland Revenue, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. To what extent is he also? And I tread carefully here.
Okay, I know where this is going. Yeah, go on.
Shall I just avoid it? Because it's
you have to genuinely tread carefully as well.
Yeah.
Basically, the design of the character looks a bit like a Nazi textbook fell open and someone went, that character looks quite fun.
Yes.
Like, there is something that's a bit like, oh no, did you have to make the avaricious character look quite so sort of stereotypical in that sense? Mm. Go any further, because it's a light-hearted podcast.
We all know what you're saying, and
where you're going. Also, at this stage, you think, oh, he's a little dwarfy, little sort of robot alien-y thing, and then, not even alien-y thing, and then later on when you find out what he is, you're like, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
It's never
which is an amazing...
That wasn't really signposted, but okay.
No, it's not signposted at all. It's such a U-turn in everything, and you go, okay, why not? Anyway, so there you go. So you now know what's he called? Hades.
Yes.
Hades is now working for the Collector. What I love about it, if you listen to the dialogue that Hades has to say to him, he calls him things like, yes, your grubbiness, yes, your otherworldliness,
your absolute
foulness. Mm. He's always taking these, like, ripping the shit out of him all the time. It's really funny. It's really done, like, slightly under the breath. It's very amusing.
But you get the impression this character's supposed to be kind of feeding off of that.
Yes.
He knows what he is and he loves it.
Yeah. So obviously this is his boss, who really doesn't clearly give a shit about any form of life. He's got his head on his desk and he's constantly punching in numbers going 9834 tax of 5% etc. Anyway, so the Doctor is escapes and then he's captured again and he's summoned to meet and they have this beautiful conversation between two people, which is Hades thinking he's going to trick the Doctor, and the Doctor going, I'm going to double-cross you no matter what you say to me. And there's this lovely to and fro between them, where Hades goes, would you like a strawberry leaf? A raspberry leaf? And the Doctor's, oh, yes, don't mind if I do. Would you like a jelly baby? It's a bit where he says, would you like a mint imperial, and gives them a jelly baby.
Yeah.
Is that on purpose, or is that a...
I don't know.
I don't know if that's meant to be a joke or...
Is that meant to be a joke? Like, the Doctor says mint imperial and we all at home go, oh!
I know what he's doing there. No idea.
Fuck! I don't understand why he says that, but he says Mint Imperial and then offers a jelly baby.
Yeah.
It's very strange. Mm. So the idea is that Hades decides to let the Doctor carry on with his nefarious scheme of getting the 1,000 Tamars and willingly offers him the 1,000 Tamars because that will lead him to the nest of vipers that live in the Undercity that don't pay their taxes, and he can eradicate them all once and for all, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. So the Doctor's now going back. He already knows that Hades is trying to trick him, so the Doctor's already one step ahead of him, but that's fine. In the meanwhile, Leela is looking for the Doctor with Bisham and with Cordo. And then, this is the only bit that makes me laugh too much, because they're wandering around the Undercity, and then they meet a group of soldiers that ride around on golf buggies with mattresses slapped on the front.
What is this? It looks like, they're annoyed DFS workers who've decided to just take this sofa underground.
It looks like the most comfortable war machine that you could ever buy.
It's
really nice. It's got pillows. Honestly, it's so comfy. I love dying in this.
It looks comfortable, but it can ram down doors like nobody's business.
Silence Tuesday.
So, like, obviously, this thing, obviously, again, like any vehicle in Doctor Who, can only go at 3 miles an hour, going which looks pathetic. The guards look sort of cool, and they built these barriers which just look like little wooden beer barrels or something. So Leela's wandering around and she's like, do you know what? This might be harder than I thought with my knife. So she meets K-9 and just goes, K-9, kill him.
I love that bit.
Goes around killing everyone.
I love that bit. And it was that point I thought, oh, K-9 is really fucking useful.
K-9 is useful. Isn't that great? K-9 is useful.
That should have been the spin-off.
Yeah.
K-9 is useful.
K-9 and Company has been cancelled, but K-9 is useful.
It's him and Handy Andy.
This week, K-9 is a doorstop. Thank you, K-9.
Sorry, I just have to say...
Thank you.
I have to say, sorry, I built a hanging shelf for your teapots that K-9 shot them all.
K-9 shot them all. I'm so sorry. What he giveth, he taketh away.
Yeah. He's unpredictable, but that's why we love him.
But again, what I really like about Leela is Leela's in a foreign place she's never been to before. She is perfectly happy to tackle anyone. She sees the guard, she's like, I'm going to kick the shit out of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cordo and Bisham are like, no, you can't. She's like, well, why? I've got my knife, I've got K-9, and then they manage to kill the guard, steal the car. Mm. K-9, by the way, hasn't killed any of the guys. He's just stunned them, so that's lovely. The Doctor's gone back to the Undercity. He's got his 1,000 Tel'mars. Now, for some reason, Mandrill and his gang, they're even more suspicious. We should also mention the other guy, of course, which is Blake 7, isn't it?
What's
he called?
I can't remember his name.
What's he called? He's only in two episodes, but he was then, I think, the next year.
Yes.
Cast in Blake 7.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, he is...
Please, it's silly that Villa. I don't hear this. Villa. Yeah, he's Villa in Blake 7.
No.
Yeah.
And they're going to brand him, aren't they?
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. There
it's
you go.
Very scary.
Yeah.
So Leela, Bisham and K-9 fight a few more people, but then they get overwhelmed and they're going to get rammed or killed by the mattress car. Finn, that's the end of part two. Which is, again, that's fine. There's a bit of jeopardy there. Mm. First jeopardy's Doctor being gassed. Second jeopardy's Leela being killed. Mm. I'm quite happy with that.
Mm.
Unfortunately, the payback for that when we open episode 3 is Leela and Co. just double back and avoid it. They just go, nah, let's not go down that corridor. Let's just go back down this one. Mm. So that's fine. And then K-9's told to hide again. And then when at the appropriate moment, Leela goes, K-9! And he comes out and he just goes, yes, mistress! And then stun.
Well, they do a bit of canoe man with K-9, don't they?
They do.
They put him in a cupboard and then they tell him where he's going to Panama.
That's what they do. They say, and then after that they go, quick, let's get on the mattress mobile. Oh, by the way, you have to lift K-9 onto that. You'll never do it.
And when you do, he's completely useless.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry,
and then Leela's trying to drive and she realises she can't.
Yes.
Yes. No, I'm glad you interrupted because I was just going to say that hiding people and under mattresses just makes me think of that girl who they hid for ages.
Shannon.
Shannon.
Help us find our Shannon. She's been missing for 6 days. I'll tell you what she looks like. She's a small metal dog.
Yeah.
Shoots lasers out of the nose.
Please, we're not in trouble. Please just come home.
There we go. We've managed to get the Shannon Matthews case into a Doctor Who podcast.
Fantastic. I'll take that off the list.
They said it couldn't be done.
Yeah, please. We've got a secret list, by the way. It's all the stuff we can't get on.
Please, please just come on. We got a fresh bowl of water and the kettle's cleaned out for you. Please, come on.
I'll let you win at chess.
You can live with Sarah Jane Smith if you want. We don't mind.
We don't mind. Is she DBS checked? Yeah, she's DBS checked. Anyway, so there's a bit of a firefight and Lena gets injured. Pichoo! And you think, oh my God, but it's fine. It just sort of grazes her head and she's absolutely fine. Nothing to worry about. Meanwhile, the doctor has now doubled back to the underground city and gone, where's Lena? And they went, oh, she went looking for you. And he's like, oh, and they're like, you got back really easy. He's like, yeah. And they're like, you're probably a spy or something. So Mandrill just punches Doctor Who. You're like, come on, don't punch him in the stomach like that. What I like is the immediate reaction of Tom Baker is to grin.
Wonderful.
He just grins, so which is really funny. Really funny. So Mandrill's like, do you know what? I've had enough of you, Doctor Who. I don't know who you are. I'm probably going to kill you. But luckily, Bishop and Cordo run back to the underground base and go, no, he's a goodie. And Leela's disappeared. She might have been caught. Oh, my God. Oh, no. So they've been split up now for the fourth time, which is hilarious. Yeah, which is great.
Makes more sense with what Tom said as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. The cogs are turning to make sure they never share the screen again.
Absolutely, yeah. Is she off-world? No, she's not off-world, Tom. Don't worry. She's not coming to the coach and horses after it. No, she's not. Don't worry, Tom. So for some reason, Lena is not taken to a correction centre or anything. She's taken directly to the collector for some obscure reason. Who's like, who is this slave of mine? Doesn't she have a B9834 mark? Etc. Lots of all that. Whatever. Lena, again, is like, who's this little fucking crumpet? He's all, you will be reconditioned. He's like, oh, get a fucking life, you beanbag. Yeah. I love it. Leela's just not remotely. She's nonplussed by all of it. She's like, I could kick you out of this fucking window if I could. I love it all. But then she's sort of like in shackles and then he's like, she will be executed. Ha ha ha. That'll be fun. It will give the workers. She's going to go to a steam room, which is really nasty.
She's
going
to be steamed.
The healthiest way to cook a Leela. So that's
steam. Also beautiful. The protein.
It makes me think Gwyneth Paltrow's watched The Sun Make It.
She's going to be steamed like a char siu pork bun. And it's being done to keep the workers happy. And in fact, the collector will give them a 2-hour holiday, unpaid, of course, while they watch the entertainment. The other thing you've got to realise is there's a slight sort of sell aspect to the collector. He's really relishing the idea of watching Lena being steamed to death. He's banking on a front row seat. He wants the sound turned up. He's really obsessed with the sound. He wants to make sure we can all hear her.
Avaricious kind of small man with nasal voice televising death. Quite a lot of sill going on here, isn't there?
There's an awful amount of sill. But at least when I see the collector, as repulsive as he is, he doesn't make me literally physically feel sick.
We have a scene with the collectors eating fucking marshmallows, have we?
Yeah, that's true. He turns into a marshmallow, doesn't he? Spoiler alert.
Yes, there you go. Hell.
Maybe the sill's eating the sun, the collector.
That's my canon now.
So Lena's taken to the collector. She has no slave number. And I suddenly went, this is all now getting a little bit like Total Recall. All the slaves working on a planet. They're sort of like, in Total Recall, they could turn on and off the air to even kill everyone. In this, they're lacing the air with chemicals to make the workers either more obedient or scared, which is why Lena actually goes for the first time, I feel scared. And the doctor says, don't worry, that's not you. You're tough as shit. There's a chemical they're pumping in the air to do that.
Isn't that a bit bee-ish? Isn't that what the queen does in a beehive? She releases a chemical to make all the
workers. Oh, interesting.
Well, first thing a bee does is well, normally there are 4 to 5 bees in a new hive, and then they fight to the death, and then the winner then releases the pheromone, and then she makes all the other females then sterile. That's the first thing she does.
How do you know so much about bees?
I'm Dr. B.
Nice to meet you.
You're more than welcome. In fact,
he's known as the B to Max.
Yes. Meanwhile, Hayde has been doing a little bit of research about this stranger, the Doctor, and finds out some information. He's from somewhere called Gallifrey and stuff like that, and runs straight to the collector to be like, oh, your magnificence, your putrescence, you absolute prick. all that sort of stuff. He's a Time Lord from Gallifrey, etc., etc. I'm giving you all this information. So then the guy, the little collector goes, then there'll be a 5,000 Telmar reward for anyone who captures the Doctor. we'll dock it from the pay of someone, etc., so I do not lose any profit. Which is sort of fun. So now Leela is now strapped into some weird big, what looks like a sausage tube, and she's going to be executed, and everyone can watch for 5 Telmars a ticket. Yeah.
She's not available in the shops.
She is not available in this oven. And so the Doctor's now, where's Leela? He comes back to the base and they're like, oh, she's being executed.
Once again,
like,
never interacting, Leela and the Doctor.
Mm-hmm. He's like, well, look, I've got to save her. They're like, well, that's really hard because we've got pressure and steam and sci-fi things that you don't understand. He's like, well, I'm the Doctor. You probably do it. Well, you can crawl through that vent, but you might die. So he goes, bit rich in my blood. Fuck it. We'll send K-9 in. So they send K-9 in, who shoots the shit out of everyone, which is really funny. And then clears the path, and then the Doctor crawls into the vent, grabs Leela, and saves her, which is fantastic. And the collector goes absolutely mental. Oh my god, we've lost all this money. 0.2% workforce down in beep 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 beep. Gets really upset. What's the finale to it? The temperature's rising again. Is it they haven't quite got out?
The finale to that episode was Leela in the sausage, the Waitrose sausage roll packet.
Right, that's
it. The temperature's rising, the pressure's getting low, and according to your sources, the street's the place to go.
Yeah.
Sung by K-9.
Not available in the shops.
The temperature's rising, mistress.
So that's a cliffhanger. Oh my god, Leela's going to cook, but the Doctor saved.
We got past the bit where K-9 says to Leela, have I done well, mistress?
Yes, have I done well, mistress? Yes. And she says, he wags his tail.
And she says, what do you want, a biscuit?
Yeah. And there's another thing when she turns him off and his tail goes, ooh, like he's upset. And sometimes you're looking at K-9 going, make your fucking mind up, K-9. What are you? What are you? All dog or all fucking super genius computer?
Yeah.
Make your fucking mind. Anyway, Doctor saves
Leela.
Yeah, they're all all John Leeson now, man.
In many ways, he's Turner and Hooch.
Yeah.
So the Doctor saved Leela, they've all escaped, and the Doctor goes back to the Undercity and says, look, listen, you guys can't take any more of this shit. You need to get a good old uprising going on. And they're like, yeah, let's do that, So the resistance is now sort of spreading, which is fantastic. So now people are spreading around to Megropolis 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, who knows how many of these places there are. They're spreading the word that they've had enough of this shit, which is fantastic. But suddenly the Mega Guards appear. But they don't capture anyone, and it's fine. And there's absolutely no to that at all. They sort of go, take that, Mega Guard. The Mega goes, oh, I'm no good. So then the Doctor goes, come on, I'm going to go and make a little telecast to everyone and persuade people to sort of stop what they're doing and all that. I'm going to do that. Yeah. K-9, you guard all these fucking arseholes. So they do all that. Meanwhile, the collector's worrying about his profits, and the workers are now, because he's been told that there's unrest, and he's like, my profits are 0.5%, beep, 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 and all that. So naturally, the collector will blame the gatherer and says, the gatherer calls the collector your embarrassment, which is really funny. Your embarrassment. The workers are, which is just fantastic. Every single time the gatherer says something to the collector, it's an insult. But you miss it if you don't listen carefully. It's really funny. The Doctor breaks into the main control room, which is the collector's room, because the collector is no longer there because he was down in the execution chamber. There's a guard. So Leela immediately goes, I'm going to stab the shit out of it. And the Doctor goes, no, you don't have to do that. Come on. So the Doctor hypnotises him for some obscure reason. Just knock him out. It's so much easier. And then obviously starts fiddling around with the main collector's computer desk. But you don't quite know at that stage what he's done. You don't know what he's done at that point. But the guard then regains consciousness a bit later on, which is really ridiculous. I mean, Leela should have just knifed him, but there you go.
She might as well.
Now they're in the collector's room. They notice a side room, and they notice a safe, and they're like, there's a lovely bit of comedy Tom Baker trying to crack the safe with the bop, 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 and then what? Bop, 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 it's really easy, and then bop, bop, I can't do it. And then he opens it with his sonic screwdriver. But Leela rushes in all happy, is going to be treasure, and she gets zapped. She gets zapped by a force shield. And he's like, oh, Leela, why run in like that? You said, oh, God, I'm with you now.
And then he says, why will none of you women listen to me?
No, a few women.
Telling. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. I know. Yeah.
I mean, he was with Harry for a while. He was a dickhead, but...
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah.
He had a penis, so it's fine.
Yes.
You'll have it.
Jesus Christ. So now we cut back to Hayde with the Collector. The Collector is now going mental. He's just found out that Megropolis 2 and 3 are now sort of being taken over by insurgents, etc.
Yeah, there's been an uprising.
Yeah, there's been an uprising. Yeah. Hayde calls the Collector your grossness, which is very funny.
Mm-hmm.
Fun.
And then Hayde's secretary, what's she called? I can't remember her name. Is it Seer or Seed or Reared?
Isn't it Marl or something?
Oh, whatever. She says, she yeah. says, some of the workers are actually now on the roof breathing fresh air yeah. underneath the six suns. And that is one thing that Hayde will not stand for.
She's called Marn.
Marn, there you go. Marn. Mm-hmm. So she like in another, what's the one where the secretary takes over?
We talked about it recently. Oh, Caves of Androzani.
Yes.
Yeah, she sort of does a Caves of Androzani later does. Where she meets all the insurgents. She goes, do you know what? I'm with you. And they go, yay! So she sort of saves her own skin. What I love yeah. about Hayde is he finds out that the workers are creating civil unrest on the roof, breathing fresh air. So he goes up to confront them. He doesn't go up with armed guard. He doesn't go up with a gun. He just goes up with his own smug gumption of, what do you think you're doing? Get back to work. They're all like, yeah, you're one of the fucking awful people. And they grab him. He's like, unhand me, you fools. You know who I am. And they lob him off the roof.
It's amazing.
Yeah, that is...
and it's absolutely brilliant stunt.
Yeah. I was thinking someone's going to come along in a minute and go, no, we mustn't do this. And now they fucking fling him off the roof.
But I quite like that.
It's brilliant because it's a genuine guy leaping off a roof stunt trick. It's not a model. Yeah. It's not a silly bit of special effects. They genuinely lob a guy in that ridiculous costume off a roof. And it looks really good. It's a really long shot. Yeah, it's a proper comeuppance. And even right to the point where he gets thrown off the roof, Hayde doesn't think for one moment that they would throw him off the roof.
No.
That's what I love about him. He's so like, you're just so they're so inferior to him.
Yeah,
he's got his own wooden
yeah.
desk and raspberry leaves, and he owns loads of money. And he genuinely thinks that these people are happy with their lot. That when they actually go, it's the French Revolution, we're going to kill you. He just goes, well, no, you wouldn't. And then, I love it. His comeuppance is so great. He's smug even as he falls. It's like, wow, it's such a good death. So now, obviously, the whole of Megropolis 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever they are, all, it's now under revolt. There's big revolts going on, lots of fights, and in the meanwhile, the Doctor has snuck back up to the Collector's office, hasn't he? And the Collector's there, and the Collector is now in major panic mode. 9834, oh my God, all the prophets. And then the Doctor does that lovely thing, which he often does with a supervillain, where he gets nice and close, puts his hand sort of under his chin, goes head to head and goes, who are you exactly? And then they do that sort of, well, I might as well tell you, Mr. Bond, which is brilliant. I love all that.
There's a lot of the Davros scene, isn't there?
Yes. But I love how the Doctor's just smiling throughout it, like, so you're from the company, and then you find out that the company of basically old Earth has been depleted, so they moved to Mars, they depleted Mars and they've moved on to Pluto. The people are expendable, it doesn't matter. Who are the company? The company are very much like the Minons that go around and sort of like basically take over worlds, deplete them and all that. But with this guy, the Collector, it's all about money. And you finally find out, which is really weird, that the race, and I can never remember what the race are called. What's the name of the race? Does anyone know? He reveals the name of themselves because they're a fungus-based parasite.
Yes. Yeah.
What are they? What's their real name?
What are they called now?
I'll look it up. Hang on.
I did write. Oh, is it Usorius? They're the Usorians.
Yeah, they're Usarians, aren't they? Because they're
Usarians.
Yes. Isn't it? That's very subtle.
Because they use you. Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
They're the Usarians, and once they've depleted Pluto, they'll basically turn off all their massive generators, remove all the suns, and unfortunately can't move off anywhere else because this is the last planet in the galaxy. There's nothing else that is profitable, so they'll just leave everyone to die. And the Doctor's well, now I'm afraid I cannot let you do that, I'm afraid. And obviously the Collector's like, you've nothing you can do to stop me, hee 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 hee. And then presses a button to go, die. And then the Doctor goes, I've already fiddled with that. And he's like, oh no. And then you have that ridiculous thing you sometimes get in Doctor Who where it goes from the villain going, I'm in control, to immediately going, oh my God, I've lost control of everything. It's too quick. It's far too
back
quick.
To the Master begging.
Yes. Because suddenly all the Collector's profits are now plummeting. He's losing loads of money, and he then cannot cope so much that for some reason best known to the writers, but I don't mind it because it's such a left field thing that I wasn't expecting. He resorts back to his sort of inert type, which is just like a sort of fluorescent blob.
Yeah.
Not only is he a fluorescent blob, Yeah, it's almost like a marshmallow, isn't it? He sort of goes, it becomes like a fluorescent goo. But for some reason, because the collector's really tiny, he seems to ride permanently on the sort of like a disabled scooter.
Yes.
But underneath, for some reason, there seems to be a chemical toilet or a toilet bowl. which he then immediately slips into. The doctor just puts the plug in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's on a mobile commode with a tit on the back.
Yes, there you go.
A lot of tits on the walls in this episode.
There really are. It's the only set dressing, really, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's sons and tits. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's sons and tits. I should remember to mention that when the collector finds out that the game's up and he can't make any money, the reason he's going to press that big red button, he's going to poison everyone as a sort of revenge.
Yeah.
And that's
so
what tips.
Properly bad.
Yeah, so that's what tips over the doctor to go. Well, he's already been in there and tinkered. The button doesn't work. All his life melts before his eyes, so he literally melts before our eyes as well. For some reason, a loss of profit means a loss of body, and he just goes boop and falls into the thing, and then the doctor puts a little thing in. He's not dead, because he's the leader. Is he dead? He's like, no, he's just gone back to his little fungusy, shitty, whatever. I'll just leave him there.
His people are like a race of seaweed people, aren't they?
Yeah, a race of seaweed people. Mm. They're not. They're a fungus. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Mm. Anyway, so there's that.
He's a fun guy.
He's a fun guy. So then the doctor goes, well, that's all cleared up. And he goes back on the roof, back to the TARDIS. Everyone goes, yay, you're the best Doctor Who. Stay with us. And the doctor's like, fuck off. I'm not staying here. No way. And then he's like, oh, shit, hang on, Leela's in the TARDIS. Maybe I will. No, hang on, no.
They're all going to go back to Earth, aren't they?
Yeah,
they are.
Well, he says, look, you guys are now in control. You could do it your way. You could go back to old Earth, because old Earth now, so much time has passed. Old Earth's probably all right again. That's pretty much a throwing of a dice, isn't it? And hoping you get a double six.
Yeah.
I mean, the doctor's often very wrong. So they go back and suddenly it's been taken over by fucking Daleks or something. But there you go. But what I like about the end is the doctor's literally like, goodbye, everyone. And they're all like, hooray, Doctor Who, hooray. And he doffs his little hat and goes, goodbye. And then leaves. And then that's it. And you're like, oh, what a lovely
thing. Nothing has been solved.
No, well, no, I suppose not. No.
It's weird, like, he's left them with more problems than maybe they had. It's quite a weird one.
Yeah, I think he's left them with problems, but maybe they won't all get taxed until they die, and they can have a slightly... Yeah, they can sort of readdress their problems, but don't work themselves to the bone, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, it's another Crotons thing, isn't it? It's like you're leaving these people who don't know how to look after themselves to look after themselves.
Yeah.
So there you go. That was the Sun Makers. Now, here's a weird thing. So many Doctor Who stories go down this route. The Doctor appears with a much maligned underpeople underneath the over people who are the we've seen this countless times in Doctor Who, but I've seen them countless times after this episode. I think this episode is the perfect example of how you do it.
Yes,
which is you arrive
on.
It really works, and it's not. I mean, it's not out of all Doctor Who stories that I've ever watched. It's not that surprising. It's not that like wow. Mm. It's not. It doesn't have many sort of like oh my gods. But as a four-parter, it just makes sense. It has a linear through line. The Doctor appears, helps some people, says, "Don't do this anymore. You're worth more than this. Why don't you fucking, better yourselves?" They do. He gives them a helping hand and then he leaves. And he does what Doctor Who should do. He appears, helps them a bit, and then buggers off. And then leaves them to carry on their own lives.
Exactly.
If they make their other mistakes, so be it. He'll probably help them in 400 years' time and he meets them again on another planet. That doesn't matter. But there are so many times where the Doctor appears, on the day 58 of a world that you know isn't fully recognised, with a race that isn't fully recognised. We've had enough. But in this one, you really do get the idea that these poor fucking people have been there. Oh, Christ, that's Barry Letts shooting
getting shot.
Yeah, well, I live in Goder's Green. No, I don't live in anyway, you really get the idea that there's a they've been slaving away for fucking years, these people.
Yeah.
Like, families of families have lived and died on Earth and Mars and now Pluto or Neptune, and they're still... So I kind of like... It's not flashy, this episode at all, is it? It's really not flashy.
No.
It's very trad pedestrian Doctor Who, but it's done very well. Good script. Leela's brilliant. The Doctor's brilliant. I think Hayde is just amazing. and I really enjoyed it. I just genuinely enjoyed it, even though it's about tax, for God's sake.
Is this you scoring it?
Sorry?
Is this you scoring it?
Yeah, I'm getting into scoring it,
What are we scoring out of, by the way?
Oh, that's a really good question. Strawberry leaves?
Strawberry leaves.
Strawberry leaves.
Sorry, you carry on scoring it,
Yeah, so there's nothing about... I was never bored with it. I kind of... Because, like, the... Unlike the one we've just spoken about, there is not 900 other subplots going on and mad shit like a minotaur and suddenly there's a mermaid, something, then there's another alien, then there's a monster. It's just this evil corporation that the doctor goes in, saves the people, stops, and there's a silly little reveal at the end that the main guy was a weird alien. But I just really like it all. I like the fact that I love Tom Baker throughout all of it. He's happy and smiling through torture, through being beaten, because he knows he's Doctor. He knows he's a Time Lord. And he knows that at the end of this, everything will be fine. And I kind of like that, which you don't often get with other doctors, where they are panicking all the way through. And sometimes, as we sometimes know, they don't even help. They just appear at the wrong time. Whereas he appears at the right time, helps them, and then goes, and now I leave you, and what you do now is up to you. Bye-bye. So I really loved it. I'm going to give it quite a high score. Maybe I was just really in the mood for it as well. I'm going to give it a really fat score. I'm going to give it 80, because I loved it. I thought it was just... fun, just brilliant fun.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I would repeat everything Paul just said, but I would also add that, you know, we talked about if you wanted to sit someone down and say what is Doctor Who, and we talked about showing them Ark in Space. As a really good example, I would point to the scene where Tom Baker is lying on that table in a straitjacket and is hopping about while doing sort of techno babble and also fixing a machine with his mouth. As a perfect example of why people love Doctor Who, because it's so eccentric, it's so Britishly eccentric, whilst also delving into sci-fi, because we've got that trope, which is a trope by this point in Doctor Who, of the other person who is doomed to death being very, oh, hello, I'm also dying, but, you know, I'll tell you what's going on. And I really, really loved it, even though it's a trad Doctor Who. It's very, very, you know, bread and water Doctor Who. It's very
There's no real surprises, but the script is really tight. It's just lovely.
And you also, you've got that moment where you first see K-9 and you think, oh. but he's really useful and he adds to the story. So I'm going to go 78.
Ooh, nice. That's high as well.
Yeah.
Tom, I don't think you're going to go as high.
I really enjoyed it. It's very Spartan. It's very, it's sort of, I don't know. I think it's all, none of the colours are sort of nice. It's either too brightly sort of brown or it's very grey. But I do really enjoy it. And like you say, it's kind of, it's a world realised through one man's anger. I love the idea that like, in another world, you know, Robert Holmes got like a letter about how he has to like reduce his cholesterol or something. And it's on a planet called the, you know, the physical fascists, and they're all making people exercise and everything. I really liked it. And it's just very straightforward, very realised. And you get Leela being very Leela, the Doctor being the very Doctor, and then villains being very villainous. And I think it really works. I'm going to go in the middle of you guys. I'm going to give it 79.
Hey. Oh my god, that's a lovely.
That's 237.
That's
Do you know what? It's like it's a palate cleanser, isn't it? Sunmakers. Yes. It's a palate cleanser between more bonkers episodes.
But
it's not a palate. It's not a palate cleanser that's sort of like a bit dull. It's just like, oh, okay, no, I'm. Oh, this is all right. This isn't upsetting me. This is perfect hangover Doctor Who TV.
It really is.
Yeah.
Okay. Brilliant. Well, sorry. Go on.
Yeah. Correspondence.
Correspondence. Nick Burden says Sunmakers or Robert Holmes hates the tax man. Lots of real but very bland corridors. Doctor gets a visa card, and Leela might end up more steaming than Tom Baker. Henry Wolfe's collector is a mad idea but works until he's killed by deficit and disappears down his own potty. Andy Elliott says the Sunmakers is probably the best of the many Doctor invokes and interaction stories, etc. It makes me wish Bob Holmes would have based more stories on the bureaucratic annoyances. They also missed a trick in not having Rejvani cameo at an ATM booth next to the Doctor.
And there's Ernie Wise about to make the first phone call.
Tom Burgess says, I may have been spending too much time on Twitter, but anyone who doesn't like the Gatherer's death is a fucking cop. Andrew F says, I like it, especially the collector and gatherer Haid, but why is the Sunmakers called that when the artificial suns have no bearing on the plot? Good point.
You are right. Yes, you are right.
That's true.
Becky says, I'd like to give you a witty reply about the Sunmakers, how it's a lovely satire on British class and financial systems, but I only made it halfway through episode one before my copy was repossessed by the bailiffs. Barnaby Sultan says, the Sunmakers is Louise Jameson's favourite story, and is one of mine as well. Genuinely funny.
Yeah, it is.
I can
really
see
funny.
That. She has loads to do.
Where are we? Sorry, I'm still going through. Color Horizon 2 says, the Sunmakers, it's witty, but the putrid color scheme of brown and yellow is more disgusting than Adric cry wanking into Nyssa's knicker drawer.
Oh my god. Yeah. Move on. Jesus.
Ben Thomas, the Sunmakers, at one point Leela was going to be killed off as the story's climax because Louise Jameson was dissatisfied with the direction of her character and also tired of Tom Baker being a cunt to her after his liquid lunches. In the end, the production team decided against killing her off, partly because they thought it was inappropriate for the story, and partly because they couldn't trust Tom not to respond to her tragic death in story by chuckling, blowing a raspberry and shrugging. Chris Williams says, Sunmakers, people moan about Doctor Who being too political now, but we've got the Doctor paraphrasing the Communist Manifesto and two capitalists getting murderously thrown off a roof and flushed down a toilet. If you can get past the budget-stricken sets and silly costumes, this is one of the funniest and smartest scripts from Robert Holmes. This TARDIS team is at their peak and even K-9 gets lovely stuff to do.
Yeah.
The old cliche that Doctor Who in the 70s offered something for all the family is to appreciate on different levels is absolutely true here. Even Bert, Doris, she's coming down the ladder again.
Oh no.
Michael says, the Sunmakers contains the most worried looking wall in Who history, and it's a shot of the underground station with the tits on the wall, and there's also a crack in the wall where it looks like it's sad. Tom Cole says, love Sunmakers. In it all to do with Holmes and fisticuffs with the HMRC. Also, Veers in it from the old Blake 7.
Yes.
There you go.
I'm just checking for more. Sorry. That's it.
That's it. Hey!
There you go. So thank you very much, John. Thank you very much, Tom. We've done the Sunmakers. Very much. We're going to plug it again because we're going to keep on plugging it, everyone. We're going to be doing Wheezing Groaning at the London Podcast Festival at King's Place. We're doing it on September the 2nd, 9:30 p.m. We're doing Silver Nemesis, three-parter. Please come. It would be lovely to see you. Please keep up with the comments, Wheezing and Groaning. Any pictures, we also love. That's it for the second episode. We'll be back with another episode hosted by Mr. Rain. It's going to be an absolute corker, I'm sure.
Going.
For you, it's going to be a week, but for us, it's going to be in a fucking minute. And there isn't enough wine in the world.
No.
Available for me to talk about that. But anyway, that's a week for you. It's a mere, as I say, dalliance. Few seconds for us. Yeah, so thanks again. And bugger off inland revenue.
Bye.
I'm going to go down my commode. Goodbye.
Amazon.com, and I make a podcast where I log in to celebrities' Amazon accounts. It's called...
What a brilliant idea for a pod. There's no original pods out there anymore, but this genuinely is.
Thanks, Ben Bailey-Smith. Anyway, it's called...
This is good, isn't it? It's clever, this podcast. You should do more.
Thanks, Kerry Godleyman. It's called...
This is such a great idea, by the way. What a great podcast.
Shappy Corsander, you're too kind. The podcast is
called... It's biographical. You can get all sorts of information out of people. This is a very good idea.
Thank you, Nick Helm. It's called My Mate Bought a Toaster.
I'm going to listen to this podcast.
Thanks, Alex Horn. Can you tell your friends?
Great thing.